Indulge in all your holiday faves this season, knowing you're getting the good stuff your body craves with Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake. It's your post-holiday recovery kit with 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. And it actually tastes delicious. With 6 indulgent flavors to choose from, it's easy to make a superfood-packed shake. From chocolate, vanilla, and chai to matcha, coconut acai, and strawberry, you can even savor the season with their limited edition chocolate mint. There are endless ways to personalize your Ka'Chava, whether you prefer it straight up or enjoy adding fruit, peanut butter, nut milk, or even iced coffee. With every 2 scoops of Ka'Chava, you're getting the highest quality ingredients. No fillers, no nonsense. Holiday nutrition has never been this easy or delicious. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's Ka'Chava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, and use code NEWS. Indulge in holiday cravings with the nutrition you need from Ka'Chava's all-in-one whole body shake. It's 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Try their newest flavors, like the limited edition chocolate mint. With Ka'Chava, you're getting the highest quality ingredients. No fillers, no nonsense. Holiday nutrition has never been this easy or delicious. Go to Ka'Chava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, and use code NEWS for 15% off.
Hey, this is Tyler with Wheels of Wisdom Podcast. Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to each and every episode. Please follow me on Instagram at wheels.wisdompodcast for updates and guest information. With that, I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hello and welcome to Wheels and Wisdom. I'm your host, Tyler, and today my first guest on our first episode is the man that made me the car enthusiast that I am today, my dad, Steve. Dad, thanks for sitting down and talking to me for a bit.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about you first. What is your job in the automotive industry?
I am a service advisor. I've been a service advisor for about 25 years in the industry. Did a little bit with parts sales as well. Probably a total of 30 years in the automotive industry.
That's a long time. That's excellent. So what's your job right now?
I'm a service advisor for a shop in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. The name of the shop is South Street Motors.
South Street Motors, very good. Mm-hmm. So what kind of work do you guys do on vehicles? What's something that your shop is comfortable with?
Pretty much suspension, brakes, tires, electronics, stuff like batteries, alternator starters, pretty much anything that you can take apart, we can do.
And of course, the basics, the oil changes and the spark plugs. And
yeah, a lot of maintenance.
Okay. Well, let's start with the first question I have for you. What made you a car enthusiast? What got you into cars?
16 years old, not knowing a thing about cars, buying my first car, and had a couple friends that were gearheads, and I just wanted to know more about cars because I was going to be driving them. So I wanted to make sure I didn't even know how to change a tire. Honestly, I don't even know if I knew how to pump gas.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Yeah. And to think where you are now versus where you started, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible. Now, what kind of car enthusiast events do you enjoy going to? I mean, these range from track days, car shows. What do you enjoy?
Well, back in the day, we used to be into a lot of classic cars. So Union Grove quarter mile racing was fantastic and fun, especially grudge runs. When you see a 17-second car go against a 9-second car, and he's almost at the finish and a 9-second car takes off and ties him and beats him. That's always fun. And to be able to walk around and learn more about the cars when you're sitting as well and talk to the people that own them and stuff like that. I enjoyed that a lot. I don't know today if I'd enjoyed as much.
You mean the Union Grove part?
Yeah. I think if I went to Union Grove, I would enjoy more of the newer cars, the turbos, the exotic cars, the supercars, more than I would the classics. Although, still like the classics, but that would be kind of cool to go to. Maybe like we'll call it a rice burner. What do they call them? Tuners against classics.
Some sort of race like that.
Something like that, where not only racing, but you're able to, there's always a spot where they sit in like a parking lot and you go around. It's got like a show as well and talk to them about the cars and stuff.
Those are fun. If the muscle hooks up,
it's a really, really good race.
Yeah.
Because so many tuners nowadays are all-wheel drive. You got the Subarus and the Golf R's and the Focus RS's. All those are all-wheel drive. So you know they're going to hook
yeah,
no matter what.
Most of your Audi. Audis.
Yeah, exactly.
Like BMW.
That's true. Didn't even think about those. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, back in my day, if you ran a 13-1 on the street, you were known as a pretty good street racing car as a classic, and now they do that in a four-cylinder. So,
easy. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, now my focus has turned more to, I like the little cars that can pull and do different things. And I do like the noise of the old cars and the raw power, the naturally aspirated stuff.
You can never go wrong.
So I'm kind of in between, but that would be a cool thing. I don't know if I would enjoy just classics or just tuners. I think a mix would be cool for me. Now, when it comes down to shows, it's the same thing. I like to see some, and they're doing a lot of pro mods now, which is really cool. I mean, come on, you know, the best of both worlds. You get the classic look, the lines that you can never find in the new cars, and yet you get the safety, the efficiency, the reliability of a newer car with these ECMs and, you know, newer engines and fuel injection and, you know, everything that comes with that. Brakes, better brakes, safer, better suspension. But yet, it kind of still looks like
it looks fantastic. Yeah. So I got two questions that I come up with while we've been talking, get my gears spinning.
Good.
So question number one, you go to a classic car show, and you think about any classic car you can possibly think of, there's something there that's going to draw your attention and keep you at that car for, let's say, 20, 30 minutes of looking at it, talking to the owner. What would be that vehicle that would draw your attention to the point of, oh my goodness, I need to look at this, and if I miss other things, I don't care?
Have to be a Mopar.
Some sort of Mopar.
A Mopar van. Probably an A-body of some sort, either a Dart or a Duster. And either it would have to be pro-modded. That would be really cool. Or it'd have to be a very rare muscle car.
Okay.
So like one of those I could talk for a while.
AAR CUDA, 446 pack, manual, something.
346 pack.
346,
I'll
okay.
take that too.
Okay.
You know, either the Hemi 4-speed or maybe even a 727 Torque Flight. I'd like to know about, you know, what rear end they got in it, what gears are running, that kind of stuff. And then with pro mods, hey, that's pretty cool too.
Well, that's my next question. I want to continue with the pro mod thing. Give me, if you are budget free, give me your best pro mod vehicle, a vehicle swap that you would put it into. So take that body, transfer it onto a frame of something else, and let's just say it fits, right? Make it really easy. Pull engine, pull transmission, whatever you want to do. What's your dream pro mod? What would you make?
It would be an A body, and I would have a hard time choosing between like a 70 Dart or a 70 Duster. I kind of like the Dart look better, the square body, because no one's doing it. You see all these Chargers and all these Challengers being pro modded with the, you know, the supercharged.
Well, there's a few CUDAs that they're dropping,
right? But those are B body, so or
oh, okay,
yeah. So I still would like to see. You know, when they came out with the Dart, they really killed me to see that piece of junk, front wheel drive.
The new Dart.
And I know I'm not the only person. If any A body fan is going to go, you just called that a Dart.
There's a lot of vehicles right now. We could get into this topic too if we want to. Yeah. They take the names, they change them into a new vehicle, and they're not even close.
They destroy it. The Ford Maverick. What the heck is that?
Do you know how many Mitsubishi fans are upset about the new Eclipse?
Yeah, the Eclipse Cross or whatever the heck it is. So, I mean, that, you know, when they did that, I would like to show them what a real pro mod or real redesigned Dart should look like.
Okay.
I think it would be amazing.
Well, let's take the old body. Give me an engine from a Mopar that you would drop into. But it has to be a pro mod. So it has to be a new.
It'd have to be engine. A 6.2 Hemi.
The 6.2 is the Hellcat, the supercharged.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd have to go Hellcat with it.
Okay. So maybe the 6.4, the 392.
Yep. Let's go 392.
Okay.
But let's tune it. Let's beef it a little bit. I'd like to see somewhere around, it's an A-body, so they weigh like 3,200 pounds.
It comes with 500 already.
Yeah. Let's go 600.
Okay.
slight modification. I'd boy,
Would you keep the
transmission.
8-speed auto from the Dodgers, or would you put in the manual? Because that's
You
pretty much your
know,
two options.
if they've redesigned the 8-speed pretty well now when it comes down to the
It
out
handles a
running.
lot of power. I mean, they
Yeah.
put in the Trackhawk, and the Trackhawk's like 1,500 horsepower, and that transmission is holding.
And it snaps on a, it also has launch and it can still hold up. So I would say the 8-speed automatic, and I'm not sure about rear ends anymore, what they're putting in them, but whatever the newest, toughest rear end would be, I would probably go with somewhere between a, now they have 8-speed, so you have plenty of overdrive. So I would
Oh
say
yeah, you're cruising on the
I
highway.
probably, I wouldn't
Absolutely.
even be afraid of a 411 tail gear anymore, because that 411 with a 3-speed, yeah, it was horrible, horrible on a highway, but 411 with an 8-speed may not be too bad.
No, that wouldn't be miserable at all.
Yeah.
No.
Indulge in holiday cravings with the nutrition you need from Kachava's all-in-one whole body shake. It's 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Try their newest flavors, like the limited edition chocolate mint. With Kachava, you're getting the highest quality ingredients. No fillers, no nonsense. Holiday nutrition has never been this easy or delicious. Go to Kachava, Kachava.com, and use code NEWS for 15% off.
You'd have so many gears to go through, you could
So
get your heart
I would
rate
keep
down.
the gears fairly steep and not too steep, so that it has that quarter mile. But then, you know, the car could be set up for somewhat cornering, but I don't think you're ever going to make a pro mod corner like a new vehicle.
Oh, they still pretty good. I mean, you can get adaptive suspension. You can ride in comfort and cruise, and then throw it in brakes and stiffen it up. Same thing with the transmission. Your transmission now is so tunable. You could throw it into comfort. It shifts gears and sits down at like 2,000 RPM of the highway, and then you throw it in race, and the thing just wants to
Yeah.
go all the time.
Well, and then you've got the bolstered seats now, the comfortable seat. And I mean, you know, the cars back in the day weren't made to really go around corners in a quarter mile, basically American muscle, as they call it. But if you try to do that, you'd be sliding all over the place on those
Especially the
seats.
bench seats
Yeah.
with the no seat belts
Well,
before they came up.
even a flat backed, you know, vinyl seat, even if it's fairly clean, unless you got skin on it where you're, you know, sticking, I can't imagine what happened.
Oh, it'd be
So
miserable. You'd
yeah.
be on the gear shifter in no time. Absolutely.
You hold on for dear life in that steering wheel.
Yeah, it would
So
be. So let's
yeah.
go to the vehicles that you've owned. So I asked you to send me a few pictures of some vehicles that you owned. So the first one that you sent me was this one. So let's talk about this. Now, I know you mentioned when you sent me this that the color isn't quite right, but it's really hard to match colors on a picture. So
It's
I'm not.
actually the exact color of my car, but that's not what was under that color, the original.
Oh, so that's where I
But
misunderstood. Okay.
no, I drove it like that. I never got to the point of stripping it down to the subline green that's underneath it. But there was a couple little spots where you could see underneath that maroon paint and the door jams and stuff. They did a good job because they painted the door jams and everything. But yeah, it was painted the exact same stripe. I didn't have the wing, or did I have the wing? I think I may have had the wing actually, and I had the dual scoop. My hood had black scoops but red, or the maroon color, so the only the scoops are black. But it looked just like that. It had the rally wheels just like that. Yeah,
So what
absolutely.
color do you prefer, the maroon or the Subline?
Subline. I love the Subline.
Yeah, I
You
do too.
either love it or hate it. I
It's
love it.
either that or the Plum Crazy Purple
Yeah,
are my two favorites.
that's a good
Those
one
are
too.
pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So tell me, what is this vehicle? It's a Duster, obviously, by the picture, but
Right.
what year? What is it?
So mine was a 70 Plymouth Valiant Duster. From what I understand, the Valiant is the comfort and optional stuff, and then the Duster was more of a sport
Okay.
thing. So it kind of had a mix of both. This one you can see had either bench seats or some big fat buckets, but I think those are bench
What
seats.
did yours have?
Mine had a console down the middle with some with bucket seats,
Buckets,
some
okay.
nice ones. Yeah.
That's really cool. Now tell me about this vehicle. Where'd you get it? What'd you do to it?
I can't honestly remember where I got it. I just remember I got it from a country road, like a farm type of area, and it was covered with a tarp on it. I don't even remember where I heard that the guy had something out there and he ended up selling it to me. And I don't think I paid more than like 1200 bucks for it. And it was running. Maybe it wasn't running. I can't remember. We could have put on the trailer, but it wasn't like it was seized up or anything. I did make sure that the crank turned. It was a 340. It was original, 727 automatic and 8 3/4 sure grip rear end, quad piston caliper, dual piston calipers, which even disc brakes back then was rare. So
Was
I
that
didn't
on
need to
the
sell
on
under.
that was on the front with the
Yeah,
rear
rears are
drums?
drums.
They were
Yeah.
still drums. Okay, that
And
was
they
a
didn't
common
make four
setup.
wheel discs for, unless it's a luxury vehicle for, you know, like a Mercedes for the long
That was a
run.
really common setup. Even today, there's a lot of people that have their muscle cars. They do the drums in the
Yeah.
back. That's a pretty common
Well,
setup.
I guess it depends on if you're pro modding it or not, but the drums in the back, if they were adjusted correctly, was a really good setup. But you can easily over adjust them and lock your rear wheels up when you try to brake. You
Oh,
can
that would
under
be fun.
adjust them and put
Okay.
all the pressure on the front brakes. So it was really about adjusting them properly. And when you did, they actually worked really good. In fact, trucks for years used to have the rear drum and the front disc brakes for, and the semi trucks still run it because it's a good setup. So.
Sure. So for anyone listening that is unsure of what a 340 is that a big block? Is that a small block? Obviously, we know that's a 340 V8, but what exactly is a 340?
Well, from what I understand, Mopar, Buick, Olds, Pontiac, small block was a Chevy thing.
Okay.
Very distinct difference between a small block and a big block.
It's all in the heads,
And
right?
it's the size of the engine. I
Okay.
mean, even the V of the engine's bigger. My 340, I swear it looked like if I remember right, I think I can tell the difference between a big block and a small block in Mopar. The manifolds are wider, so I think it's a bigger
You
thing,
think
but
that's
I
a
don't
big
think
block?
it's like
Okay.
a, you know, like GM where you can definitely tell the difference. But it's a, you know, it's a equivalent to the 350 in GM. But it was very, very well built, and I think it revved pretty high. I want to say 7.5 or so.
That's pretty good for a V8. Yeah, that's
Yeah,
pretty impressive.
and it was very underrated with 290 horses.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of
Yeah.
fun. Now, this vehicle, obviously, you said you found it under a tarp at a barn. So, what did you have to do? Was it a lot of work you had to do to it? Was it pretty simple?
So I think the interior just needed cleaning up. I don't remember any rips or anything in that interior. It was absolutely mint. Really dirty though. So a lot of scrubbing. Back in those days, all the door cards and everything were vinyl, so it was pretty easy to clean up. But carpet wasn't too bad. No holes. Headliner was good. So the interior I didn't have to do much with besides clean the heck out of it. The exterior, the paint was dull. So I did wax it and made it look pretty decent. It didn't look like a paint job, but it looked decent. And there were spots in the paint that weren't the best. I think it had Traeger SS wheels on it, something really ugly with like the Unilugs, which you don't know what that is, but
Oh, I don't know
back in the
what
day, they used to make multiple lug patterns by making the hole oval,
Oh,
which
goodness.
sounds very dangerous. And the only thing that made it not oval was selecting the correct washer.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That
So
sounds like a
you think
disaster.
about it in your age, it's like, what are you thinking with all that torque and stuff? But yeah, Unilugs were horrible. And I believe it had that. So I, you know, at Jefferson Swap Meet used to live there. I ended up, the engine ran fine. The carb needed rebuilding. I believe that's one of the first things I did is take that out, put it on the table, and
And tear that thing apart,
tear it
yeah.
apart and rebuild it. I believe it was a Holley from the factory. Pretty easy to rebuild. Wasn't, you know, these cars when they're built, they didn't over carb them. They didn't put these huge carbs on or anything. Some people try to do that and end up being slower than they would have if they would have gotten it. It was pretty balanced, so I kept it the way it was. The only thing that I did do is I read that if you can get them to breathe better, intake wise and exhaust wise, that you can get quite a bit more horses out of them. So I did get the headers, which gives it a pretty good sound too. And I wasn't going to drive it in winter, so I didn't care about that.
Sure.
And I did take the heads off and had 202 valves put in, which are bigger, the biggest valves you can put in them. And then I did buy a, since it's a front end loader, 8 3/4, very simple, pull the axles. The axles were the 31 spline, which are the bigger axles. Pull those out, put new seals in, and then I brought that front end loader, which is very heavy and very awkward to try to get out on your in your driveway, and put in, I got, I think I got, I want to say 380 tail gears I got from Jefferson. It was all built ready to go, and I kept the original. I think the original was like a 331 or something like that,
More for
so more
highway.
for highway.
Okay.
So yeah, I did that. The transmission, I don't think I, besides draining the fluid and filling it in filter, I don't think I did anything with that. The seals were fine. And I think I went with an aluminum intake. I'm almost positive I went with an Altobronch intake.
You put a lot of
So
blood, sweat, and tears into this vehicle.
yeah, I worked on it for a long time. The time it was down, because remember we have winters, so my goal was to get it driving. I bought it very early in spring, and my goal was to have it driving for the first winter, and I barely got it driving for the first. In fact, the fall swap meet is when I got the rear end
Oh,
put
that's
in.
pushing it, because that's end of August, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think maybe September.
September maybe,
Yeah,
right,
I
and maybe
think.
even September.
Yeah.
And for those, anyone watching that doesn't know where Wisconsin winter starts, it
Yeah.
can start on Halloween. So if
Well, it
you
can
think,
start before Halloween, but snowing on Halloween,
right,
yeah.
we've had, I've experienced snow on
Yeah,
Halloween.
we've had several
So
3 inches
if
on
you have
Halloween,
never
yeah.
experienced a Midwestern winter, and he's saying he got a rear end in September and had to get installed before winter starts, gives you a time frame. So you know what's going on. That's pretty quick. So now let's go back to the name. Valiant Duster, best of both worlds. Since getting rid of this, have you ever seen another Valiant Duster?
No, I haven't seen one with the writing on it like mine has on it. As of yet, I'm sure they're out there, but I remember my title had it on there too, which is really weird. And
That's
it had
pretty
some
cool.
really real weird options like tilt wheel, cruise control, air conditioning, the front disc brakes, had a neat clock in the middle of the dash. I'm trying to think, my cousin who was in the A-bodies unfortunately told me afterwards, but he was over there helping me, I think, do the heads. Yeah, he was helping me do the heads one weekend or one Sunday, and he's like, "What on earth?" He looked at that interior, and he had a Dart 60, no, a 72, I think, that he used to race at Union Grove. Not a quick, like 14.9 or something like that. And he looked at it and he's like, "This is weird. Look at all these options." I can't remember if it had power windows. I want to say it did, but I don't know if it did. To tell you the truth, I don't remember. But they had a lot of options, and he was like, "Wow." And the cruise control was all there. It all worked. I had it hooked up to the carb, and the whole vacuum was a vacuum assist one.
Sure, that's crazy. The
Yeah, I
fact you've
mean,
never seen another one, though. And what year did you get rid of that estimation? I mean, it goes back quite a ways. But what do you think, 20 years since you got rid of it? 25?
no, it was before I even started dating your mom. So it's a
Well, you guys
long
been,
time.
yeah, so let's say 30.
We've been together 34 years.
Okay, so 35.
So 35,
So in
28,
35
yeah.
years, and I know we don't go to a lot of shows, but the fact that you've never seen another one. So this is an opportunity I'm throwing out to the people that are watching and listening to this.
Yeah.
Look me up on Instagram. It's wheels.wisdompodcast. And send me a picture if you happen to have one of these. If you do, I would be amazed if you had a, say it again, Plymouth
Buying a duster.
Valiant Duster with the 340.
Right.
Let's add another level to that. If you have that kind of vehicle, I don't care what color it is. If you have a Plymouth Valiant Duster with a 340, send me a picture. I want to see it, and Dad wants to see
Well,
it.
maybe all dusters are Valiants. I don't know, but I don't ever remember seeing any with Valiant written on the side,
Well, someone
like
who
mine
knows
did.
their dusters
Yeah.
really well will know, but either way, if it's not, and they're only specific kind of Valiants, if somebody owns one and we can get a picture of one and
Well,
see.
mine's around here. Well, it was around in Wisconsin.
Well, that's fair, but I'd like to know how many are
Yeah.
actually out there. It'd be pretty cool. But let's go into your next vehicle, which is this. This is your, tell me what this is, 2025, because I know the front end design.
My first new vehicle ever at 55 years old.
That's pretty good. So it's the Jetta DLI, the Volkswagen. Tell me, what you like about this. What draws you to the GLI over all the competition that is around the four-door sedan? I mean, the first one that comes to my mind is that Elantra N. It's about the same kind of price range. But what draws you to the GLI platform specifically?
Well, I had a couple of Jettas that were just the one for either, or a Golf too. They were okay, but once you drive a GLI, and I had a situation in my life where I was able to get a little bit, you know, I drove, 40 miles each way?
Yeah, it was quite a bit, yeah.
And I just told my wife, look, I'd really like to get something that I enjoy driving, not just gets me by for, you know, 40 miles to the gallon or whatever.
Yeah, it can make a hard job a lot better to enjoy your drive.
Yeah, you know, and then I had a lot of roundabouts and stuff like that. I just thought maybe I'd get something. So when I looked for the original GLI that I got was, I always looked for certified used because then you get that awesome warranty. I got my first one down in Franklin, Wisconsin.
There's Frankport Volkswagen, is that right? Or was that a different one?
I think it was Gordy Boucher Volkswagen in Franklin, Wisconsin.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was Gordy Boucher. But they sold me one. I think it had 12,000 miles on it or 14. It was very low miles. And it was a silver.
Well, see, I remember that vehicle vividly because I remember when you brought it home. And the first thing I did to it was give it a deep exterior cleaning because the brakes and the brake caliper specifically was the dirtiest caliper I'd ever seen. It was supposed to be red, and it was almost brown.
Yeah.
It was disgusting.
Well, in the backs, ended up having lot rod, so it was sitting on the lot for a while. And I had pulsation that drove me nuts, and all my people I work with are like, you're so picky. I'm like, hey, you come off an off-ramp, and you hit your brakes, you know, slowing down. And you watch your passenger seat shake like someone's, you know, doing a boogie in it. I just didn't like it. So, and they're, you know, they're known for having kind of not the best rear brake system,
right,
close to the front. So I changed the rotors out probably 2 weeks after I had it. Just got new rotors on it.
The
brake pads were fine. But it had 12,000.
I know what this offers over a normal Jetta because I know the GLI. But if anyone is watching that is in between, they're saying, I want a Jetta, was it SEL is the best one?
That's the loaded up one.
That, and they're looking at GLI, and they're saying, okay, but the little bit of price difference, sure, it's got a little more power. Is it worth it?
Well, like most people are, you know, understand the GTI. This is the four-door GTI, four-door sedan GTI, not the hatchback. It's got a little less power. I don't know why Volkswagen did that. Maybe because old people drive it like me and it's not as, you know, they don't need as powerful. Or the GTI has that name and they just want it to be, you know, maybe be up there.
Can't replicate it.
Yeah, you know, the DSG transmission, yeah, they do have the manual. I had a manual before my GLI. I'm just too old for a manual, my knees. But I love it, like, on a day-to-day driving, but when I hit traffic, it was absolutely horrible.
The DSGs
take off, really stop, good. Take off, stop, take off, stop.
DSGs are really good, though.
Yeah. So, the perkiness, that's the only way I can describe it. You know, you see these Honda Accord 2.0 turbo and this, that, and then when you put them together, it may even have more horsepower, but there's something about the power band and the torque band and the Volkswagen and that DSG that it, I mean, this gives the Mazda a run.
Oh, the three turbo.
Yeah, the three turbo, and it's got 250 horses. It's got 230.
No, Mazda. You know? Yeah, you're right. 320 foot pounds of torque.
Right.
Yeah.
And we've got, what, 265?
Well, I think if Mazda took that turbo and took out the slush box and dropped in a DSG, I think.
Exactly, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, in the $30,000 to $35,000 range, well, now. That's not real fair because they used to make the S model. That was my first one. Those were quite a bit cheaper.
Yeah, but that's what it is now. I mean, 35, well, 36.
Right. Right now, you can get a good price, 32 on one, and they're only the Autobahn. So they're pure leather, air conditioning, heated seats.
You have a what? Heated steering wheel?
Heated
and you
steering
got cold
wheel.
Seats.
Yeah, cold seats, air conditioning seats. Yeah.
I just wish they would have put the air vents in the back.
I don't know why.
I don't know why they didn't do that. That doesn't make any sense.
That is a complaint of a $30,000 vehicle that they didn't put the little air vents in facing the back people because it takes a while for it to get cold out there. So
it does. I know that from experience. It gets really toasty in the back on a hot day, and it does not cool down very fast.
He's like, aim it back here, aim it back here.
I'm toasting.
And we're trying. But by the time it gets past my seat, it's already warm until it,
or it doesn't reach at all.
Yeah,
it's not great. But so this over in a launcher end, let's go back to the original question. So you've got this, and you've got a launcher end. They're both the same kind of price range. They're both made from very different people.
I think new the Elantra was $3,000-$4,000 more.
Unless sure.
It was like 37.
Okay, I mean that's
this was
still
new.
That's still
in
the
it's
same
in
kind
there,
of ballpark,
but though. You know my problem with Hyundai and Kia is that the track record isn't the best with their engines. So
that's true. I've also
even
heard
though
it's, that the Elantra rides like a rock.
Well, and I could see that. And I don't know about they have a supposed DSG, or I'm sorry, a dry clutch. But I don't know if it's any good or, if it's been tested or anything like that. The Elantra, I mean, it's a little bit smaller, I think, too, than the GLI.
Maybe a little bit, sure.
I don't know. It's just I was a Volkswagen fan, so I didn't even test the Elantra.
Was
I tested, my wife looked at one, and it was a GT model.
With the 1.6.
With
yeah.
the 1.6 200 and
201.
201.
Yeah.
And I remember the interior was very nice.
I remember being really
I do
peppy
remember
too.
It, but peppy, but I do remember it riding rough. I remember Barb even complaining about that. So maybe they just have too low a profile. I mean, this could easily handle 19s right now. They got 18s and they got a little bit of sidewall on them, and it still handles like a dream. And coming out of a corner with that, this also, I should mention, has a, the GTI and GLI have a transfer case in them that is
the front differential. Yeah.
That is amazing when it comes down to cornering and coming out of corners, especially, which I don't know, again, about the Elantra.
I don't know. I don't dig into it much. I was just curious if you had
I know even a lot of guys track these, and they have a lot of luck with them. So,
In your opinion, for someone your age, for what you use this vehicle for, give me, if you can, three things, your top three things that you like about that vehicle. Top three. Thinking about talking to another 55-year-old.
Just the overall driving experience, I have to put that in one.
Okay.
Because it's horsepower, it's perkiness, it's responsiveness. The overall driving experience, number one, gas mileage is pretty dang amazing. Mm-hmm. When you're not hopping on it, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36. If you're hitting the cruise control and just going, it's pretty amazing. And of course I like the looks of it. I love the color I picked out, or
which is the
my color son picked out, kind of, sort of.
I did tell you to go with that color over the black.
Over the black.
You had that, you had black. And I told you that black was just so everyday vehicle color.
So many people have
and that you would black. Look at it one day and say, man, I wish I would have gotten that. And what color is that, by the way? Because it looked blue.
It's
not blue.
Called Monument Gray, and kind of as the sun starts to go down, it definitely looks gray, and in the sun it looks more of a bluish gray. But definitely when the sun starts to go down, it looks more like what you would make a monument out of.
And what is this color, is this color wearing on, is it starting, are you really enjoying
well,
it?
Well, believe it or not, I looked it up, and it's supposed to be one of the most common or popular. I don't know if you can get many of them, but it's a popular color.
It's a beautiful color too. I mean, I know it takes a little bit to get used to a new color like that, especially when it's out of the ordinary, a little out of the box.
But I still find people that like we. I'm on a Facebook page for GLIs, and there's still people that are like, "eh," and then some people, "oh, I love that color."
See that color? If I owned it, that would get under my skin pretty quick. Yeah. I'm a big fan of it. I want to talk about a job that you had a little while ago. This was a couple of years ago, so I know we're going back in history a bit. I want to say, because I was working there as a porter when I first started college, and that would have been 2017. And then you lasted there a little longer because
I went to the pandemic, so it was 2020.
Okay, so we're going back 5 years. Yeah. But I want to talk about Ford, and I want to talk about it on a consumer basis. So my question to you is, from a service standpoint, from your knowledge and what you know about Ford, again, we're going back 5 years, but give me a couple of vehicles and give me some engines that you would tell someone to buy if they're looking new, used, whatever it might be. Give me a couple of engines, maybe two or three that you know are decent, that you like, and then you would say, I would go buy that vehicle as long as it got that engine in it.
Well, I had my cousin buy a 18 Ford Edge. He bought it with very low miles. I think it had 18,000 miles on it, something like that. That was the last year they made the 3.5 liter V6 naturally aspirated. Great engine, especially the newer ones where they got the chain a little bit better. It still has an internal water pump, but you're going to go a long ways before that fails.
How long do you think, estimation?
What we see in a business is somewhere between 120 and 170,000.
That's pretty darn good for a water pump.
And, you know, you don't even need to do the change when you're in there, but, you know, it costs quite a bit more. But you're taking that front cover off, either way you look at it, for that water pump. So I made sure he got an extended warranty up to 125,000 just to cover him.
Sure.
So he's got an extended cover.
So any vehicle, it's got a 3.5 liter non-turbocharged engine, and you would say that's a pretty good buy.
3.7 and 3.5 were good little engines.
They were both good.
Okay. Now they're not the best on gas mileage.
Sure.
I mean, they're not bad, but they're not the best. If you're cruising, excuse me, if you're cruising, I think you can get like 30, I want to say, maybe 31. But, you know, you're going to average probably more like 27, maybe 26.
Yeah. Like and that. If you're looking for fuel economy, what's your fuel economy Ford engine that you would highly suggest?
There's very few. There was a 2.5 liter naturally aspirated.
Oh, the four-cylinder.
Four-cylinder.
Yes.
Which was, in my opinion, a fantastic engine. It made it the Focus. Very rare to find it in a 13 and newer Escape, the new body style. The older body style, I believe, was a 2.3 liter, which was basically the same engine. Again, still a good engine, way back.
And that was the naturally aspirated one, not the new turbo one.
Yeah, had. So turbo-wise, no 1.5, no 1.6.
What about the 2.0?
The 2.0 in the ST was a decent little engine. I think they detuned it a little bit. I don't know if it's like the Volkswagen where they have the different 2.0 internals, but the 2.0, even in the Escape, if you're going to buy an Escape, the 2.0 turbo was a much better engine than the 1.6 or 1.5.
Okay. So your three engines, you got the 3.5 naturally aspirated. Any vehicle, snag it. That's a decent engine.
Yeah.
You've got the 2.0 turbo is at least decent.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, your 2.5
naturally aspirated.
So that's your three go-to engines when it comes to Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me two or three that you would tell anyone watching this that's looking at a Ford, don't touch them. They're a little
long. Again, this is my opinion, but
well, it's
and I'm sure there's people out there that have had luck, but I have seen a lot of failures in the 1.5, 1.6 liter. 1.5 took the place of the 1.6. Didn't seem to be much better.
The Fiesta STs tend to hold up.
Now, the 1.6 without the turbo,
yeah,
that naturally aspirated tends to hold up a lot better. I don't know what the deal is.
Interesting.
Because the problem that they were having was a machine head problem. So I don't know if they were built on different lines or what happened, but
sure.
There was some water intrusion problems with the head gasket / heads. But I would say, the Fiesta with the 1.6 naturally aspirated tended to do fine. I don't know about the Fiesta ST. I don't know if that's maybe a better powerful. I don't know. And people have to maybe they can comment.
Yeah.
The ST, you know, I'm sure the 1.6 and the ST has got more horsepower than the 1.6 in the Escape.
Well, probably. And maybe they did something to it to make it a little stronger, and all of a sudden the problems are solved.
Yeah, it's very possible.
So let's go somewhere.
What else? I would stay away. Definitely stay away from the 3.5 twin turbo.
Okay.
And the trucks and anything. And again, they've redesigned it. The timing chains are a lot better, but they're 10 feet long and they tend to stretch. The twin turbos are, we call them hair dryers in the business. They're tiny. They got oil coolant going to them. They can leak and have problems. In Wisconsin, we have lots of rust problems. So we rust to the manifold, now you're replacing a manifold. It can just turn into a nightmare. And honestly, when you first get them, for some reason, they break in a little bit. They do get better gas mileage in the Coyote. But then after a while, people are complaining, what happened to my gas mileage? And they're getting worse gas mileage than a Coyote. So I would definitely go, that's the other one, the Coyote 302.
Oh, the 5.0.
The 5.0.
Yeah, the cycles are pretty.
I have no problem with those in any vehicle. I haven't seen anything besides there was an issue with, I don't know if it's oil burning in the trucks or what, but they somehow changed the dipstick to make it look like it's okay or something.
Sure.
There was some kind of a TSB or something on that.
So the 1.5, the 1.6 turbo, the 3.5 twin turbo, those are the ones that maybe give them a little more look into, find out what's been done, make sure they're in better shape.
If you're going to keep it to 80, 90,000, you're probably okay.
Yeah.
But when you start getting to that midlife crisis, where you have to do all the maintenance and everything like that, they'll start going down. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about the 2.7s? Because those have kind of faded, but they were out and they're used.
I don't know much about the 2.7. I know that they had oil pan problems. They replaced a ton of them. They're plastic. Leaking. We had a guy with the Fusion ST, Fusion Sport.
Fusion Sport, yeah.
That with the 2.7.
I don't understand why they put the 2.7 there. And then, I mean, I know it's a smaller vehicle compared to the Taurus, but I feel like they could have wedged the 3.5 in there.
I don't know. But the 2.7 is quite a bit smaller. But the 2.7.
Oh, the Taurus, though.
Yeah, well. The Taurus still beat it, which is kind of scary because you would think with a smaller and almost as much horsepower. But that I seen one come in with 5,800 miles out with fat heads.
Oof.
So
that's the 2.7.
I'm pretty sure the guy beat it.
Okay.
I don't know.
Or he didn't break it in right, maybe.
I'm not sure. Again, those with Fusion Sports can comment, how it goes and what kind of problems.
If it's working for them, fantastic. It's just the few that you've seen are just not in that perfect of shape. So just
you have to remember when you work at a dealership, you see all the bad.
Right, you see the worst of the worst.
And if you start thinking about what my shop foreman told me this once, because I was really frustrated with a few vehicles that we see all the time. And he said, well, think about it now. You're seeing, three, four, five, six a week. Now there's millions of them been sold in the US. Is it really as bad as you think it is? I don't know.
No, but I mean, it's good consumer advice, because if you're saying the 3.5 twin turbo and the 1.5/1.6 turbo are a little on the questionable side, it gives the consumer a chance to go in and look at what's been done for maintenance, how many miles is on this, what's upcoming, what am I going to be expecting?
Yep.
And they can also look up other people's stories. Okay, I had problems at
for sure
80, 90,000. So at least they know what they're getting into, and it gives them the chance to look and find out.
And a lot of things that happen when people are buying used cars in the business, what I've seen is people trade their cars in before the midlife crisis, especially if you have a timing belt water pump to do it, like on a Honda.
Or a chain that might stretch.
Or a chain that might stretch or something, or a turbo that may be getting, they turn them in and they don't do any maintenance. And then, it used to be the car lots would look at that and they would try to do the maintenance. But now with the competition of online stuff, they don't do that anymore. I don't know hardly any of them that do it anymore. So we'll see. I have a story of just recently, this last week, a guy and bought it from his dad, but I'm sure his dad, I think his dad passed away. And I guess he didn't have maintenance record that, Carfax, we work with that at our place, we're certified. But not everyone has Carfax, not everyone is on Carfax. And the dealerships aren't so of putting on Carfax because they have their own dealer network. So they figure, you can call New York and find out what your Nissan had done in any dealer network. Mm-hmm. So some of them are really bad at putting it on Carfax. You look it up and there's nothing been done. But they didn't know that. They figured, maybe the 90 or 100 was done when they bought it. And now they have 143,000 on it and they're getting misfires or, spark plug gap is twice as big as it's supposed to be.
Sure.
And, transmission maybe never got touched, and now you're afraid to change the fluid.
Sure, or then you're a couple grand in deep to get that vehicle back up and running.
Yeah, I mean, you're eight to 1,200 on most vehicles for full maintenance, unless you're talking a V6 spark plug change out where you have to pull the upper intake, mm-hmm. then they can get up there in price. But and the spark plugs aren't cheap. They're Iridian, that they're 100,000 mile plugs. So but if you can find one that's been taken care of, and if you take care of your cars, they're gonna last a lot longer.
That's true. That's very true. I got two more questions for you on Ford. The first one is a pretty simple one. All the vehicles that Ford has gotten rid of over the years, and it's been a lot, because now they're just down to SUVs. Out of all the vehicles they've gotten rid of, which one would you bring back? And would you put back on the market? Which one do you think would do the best? Which one do you like?
Well, if they wouldn't have ruined the Focus with the dry clutch that every single one had to have replaced almost once or twice or three times in its life with a shuttering, the concept of the little hatchback slash the small four-door, and a price on those, and if they're the normal 2.0 non-turbo, all that kind of stuff, which most of them had, good little cars. I mean, those, I just think that there's still a market for someone that can't afford a $30,000 car.
Yeah.
And then the Fusion, I thought was a fantastic car. I don't know about sales.
That's the one I'd bring back. I know about sales. I don't know about them either, but right. I'd bring that back, the Fusion. I remember, so in Europe, they called them Mondeo. Mm-hmm. That's the name. I remember when Top Gear, and I think it was James at the time, with Jeremy and Richard, of course, he put a picture up of the Fusion and then snapped it right off the screen and said, "What was that?" And both the guys, I don't know if it was set up. Usually most of their stuff wasn't set up. Mm-hmm. They both thought it was an Aston Martin because of that grill. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they said, "That's the new Mondeo or the new Fusion," they were so awestruck by how good it looked. Mm-hmm. And I had driven a few of them as a carporter. I loved those things. They were comfortable. They were reliable. Yeah. They were spacious. They looked fantastic, too.
Some of the everyday driver, the Titanium, I think, was the loaded one.
Platinum. Platinum was one step up. That was the crazy one.
They were sweet. And again, 2.0 turbo, not a bad little setup. And the naturally aspirated one did not come in the higher end ones, but still was a great little car.
The 2.0 turbo was pretty peppy too. When I got my Jetta wagon, when I got hit on the Beltline that one time, I got a Fusion Hybrid for like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I didn't enjoy, of course, how sluggish it was, but outside that, it was comfortable. It was spacious. It drove nice. I love that thing. It was fantastic. A lot of
options. Hybrids. Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, the hybrid, that was a good little car. We didn't have any problems with hybrids.
No, they do pretty good too.
Their infotainment center thing, updates and stuff, we had issues with that. But just everything about that vehicle was we didn't just, a lot of them were sold. We didn't see a lot of them. I don't know what happened to sedans and small cars. I mean, I understand the SUVs. I understand the headroom. I understand getting in and out, for older people and stuff like that. But I feel like people still want the sedans. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe we can get some information on that from people responding as well. But
yeah.
And the little hatchbacks, I mean, come on, man. The space, you put the seats down.
Sure.
Stuff you can fit in there, the Mikey Volkswagen, we call it.
It squeezes anything. I mean,
and that's the other thing with that Jetta. If you see that trunk, you freak out.
It's pretty big.
It's huge.
It reminds me of the Fusion.
Yeah, that had a big trunk too.
It was very big. So this is another question on Ford. This is not the one that I was going to give you as the second one. This is just a follow-up to this. Very quick answer. Should Ford, and does Ford need to bring the Fast Ford hatchback back to America? Yes or no?
I don't know what the sales are, but I would, for me, yes, I'd love to see it.
I would too.
I would love to see
the ST went to Europe and they dropped the 2.3 liter turbo and it gave like 208 horsepower, 280.
Kind of like what they did with the GTI.
Yeah, and then they left it over there. They never brought it.
They always get the fun stuff over there.
So frustrating.
I don't know if they're, they can't test the market because it's a different thing over there that people can't afford gas and everything. So I don't know if that's a good place to test it, but why they get the good stuff is beyond me.
I don't know. I wish they'd bring back the Passport too. Yeah. So my last
question. I'm sure there's a lot of ST fans out there that would agree with.
There's a lot of STs on the road right now
they're still holding up.
15s and
something
like that.
Still holding up.
And they look good. Yep. They do look really good. I've always liked
them. Sound good, look good, run good. Yep. Most of them have problems. Yep.
Yeah. My last question on Ford, we're going to talk about, you mentioned a few of the problems, like you mentioned the Focus. Had the transmission problem and the Fusion with the infotainment,
And now Ford has hit the record for the most recalls ever. And it's only July. They beat their own record. And I'm sure there's going to be more that are going to come up. So here's my question to you as a consumer. I want to ask you this as someone who may buy something. So if Ford were to take all these problems and they were to fix them at the manufacturer, better parts, I don't know what they need, better materials, you name it. They fix it. And they charge, let's say, between $5,000 and $7,000 more per vehicle, but the recalls are gone. Would you be interested in paying that extra, knowing that that history is no longer there, or are you okay with the recalls?
Well, I think this is why people tell you never to buy a new model, not just a new model, but a new upgraded model. If when you're trying stuff different, which Ford tends to do a lot of, let's be the number one for this, let's be the number one for that, let's try this, let's try that. Engineering wise, I'm sure they do their best. I don't know materials, what's happening. It could be materials. But when you're doing a lot of that, you're going to have recalls. And I think that's where Ford comes in. The recalls I've seen, some of the really dumb ones, the door latches, I don't know exactly what happened there. As far as I know, they're replacing them with, similar door latches. But then again, you got to remember that some places are a lot pickier about the recalls than others.
Well, that's fair. But still, let's say you can eliminate recalls.
Yeah. Right?
If you can eliminate, would you be willing as a consumer to pay more for a vehicle with no recalls?
Well, I think Ford's pretty reasonably priced right now. And I think they have to stay that way because most of your domestic cars are priced to compete with each other. So have to compete with each other. You have Lincoln, which is supposedly the better quality and higher price. Someone wants to go to Lincoln, but I think Lincoln, when it comes down to recalls, are almost the same as Ford. When it comes down to, like, if a Ford Explorer has a recall, the Aviator is going to have a recall.
Yeah, that's true.
Pretty much the same vehicle type of thing, but drivetrain wise or whatever, but I don't know what the deal is. I haven't been in Ford for a while. I don't know why they're breaking this record. It's not a good thing at all.
No, it's not. That's not the record you want to be beating.
When Ford's already got the, found on road dead and that kind of goofiness going on.
It doesn't help their name, does it?
Of course, that's from the GM people, but
it
doesn't help to have catastrophic failures in brand new engines and stuff like that. But, everyone has them. Hardly ever you're going to find a vehicle that doesn't have something go wrong in a certain factory date. That's how they figure it out, by VIN number. And then they're like, they got to fix it. And how they fix it is really important, too. When I was working at Ford before the pandemic, they had tons of loaner cars. They had a great system. And I think it helped the new/used car industry as well over there. I don't think there was ever a time I didn't have a loaner. I think as a service advisor, I had 6 loaners for myself.
That's pretty impressive.
I want to say it was like, that's a lot. Now, if these recalls are getting severe, you better have loaners.
Mm-hmm.
If they're a one day, you can get away with not having a loaner. Sometimes, most of the time, maybe pay like Volkswagen does, they pay for your Ubers. That's fine.
That's becoming a pretty common thing now. Yes.
Yeah. And then we did that. We had a, an online thing where we would pay for that. so those recalls, as long as it's not too inconvenient for the customer,
mm-hmm.
and they're not coming back every month with a new recall, people will usually not say, I hate this vehicle because of that. What makes them hate the vehicles is when they get over the warranty and it falls apart.
Absolutely.
There are a lot of people that don't go over the warranties anymore because of that. They are like, no, I'm not going over the warranty. I'd rather have that monthly payment and not have a big surprise. Also, your maintenance tends to show up after your warranty. That's mm-hmm. when all the maintenance starts to happen. But I think that's the big thing right there. What I see in the industry, when the people say, I'll never buy whatever it may be, a Nissan or a Ford or whatever, ever again, it's because of that. Either they bought it secondhand and already bought it with 80,000 miles on it, or they bought it with like 40 or 50 and right after the warranty. 60,000 is most warranties.
Sure, there's some problems.
There's problems, and it's 1,000, it's 2,000, it's 3,000. That's when sometimes they fix it and trade it in right away and get away from that brand completely.
Sure.
So yeah.
And that's actually the brand I want to talk about next. You mentioned it very, very briefly, but let's talk about Nissan for a minute. Now, the reason I bring up Nissan is because you and I both like Nissan. We like some of the vehicles they make. I mean, I like the 370Z. I like the GTR. I like the Altima. I like the Maxima. I love the engines. I think they look fantastic. They make a lot of really good vehicles. But right now, they are going under. I just saw something on Facebook about them closing down some other shop or something like that, some other big manufacturing plant. They are going under. So let's do this fairly briefly on Nissan. But how would you fix Nissan if you were Nissan CEO? What would you do?
They've got to get rid of the CVT, put in 6-speed, 7-speed, 8-speed, whatever they can come up with that is not sluggish like the Mazda. They got to get a little better than the Mazda because the Mazda is a fantastic vehicle and they're going to have to compete with that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have to be a little spunkier, I think, in their transmission because if Mazda falls short, it's that the spunkiness of the transmission.
Okay.
So, and then price point, they're going to have to keep the price point lower than almost everyone else so that they can build back up. But that CVT just gave them such a bad reputation, and I don't know why they did it.
They're still not that great.
And the thing is that without the CVT, they can still get 40 miles to the gallon. I mean, look at Volkswagen. They're getting, mm-hmm. you know, my wife's normal Jetta 1.4 turbo gets 40, 39, 38. I mean, she's cranking it out all the time up there, bragging about, you know, the mileage she gets. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I'm not considering it's mostly highway, but still, you know, my wife's first ever new car was a 91 Nissan Sentra. I remember going and buying it with her and going around the lots and talking, you know, we saw the Ford Escort. We saw all these ones that compete with it. And it was just a much better car. Just shutting the door, you could tell the difference, kind of like with Volkswagen.
And now today, when it comes to Nissan, if you had a choice to go in a Nissan lot, you probably wouldn't step foot on there, would you?
I would if I was buying new and I was buying selling it before the warranty was up.
Okay, because but the how three, many people the, really the 336, do that, realistically?
Well, the 336, they don't have much problems with. But the drivetrain 560, again, not many problems. But as soon as it hits past that, you can start having problems.
So many people nowadays are keeping their cars well past 60, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're so expensive.
I mean, and there's the second hand buying them at 60, 70, 80,000 is very common. Mm-hmm. And they figure, I just bought a $20,000 or $14,000 or $13,000 vehicle, I'm going to be fine.
Sure. Well, let's go with that CVT and let's talk about just briefly maintenance on the CVT. How can somebody, if they're watching and they own a CVT, mm-hmm. how can they get their CVT to last as long as possible?
I would do changes every 30,000. I know it's crazy. I recommend oil changes every 6,000, 6 months. So that's what 5 oil changes or so, get the 30,000.
Mm-hmm.
Just do it. It's a drain and fill. Some of them do have filters that are hidden that people don't know about, but the drain and fill, and I would go with a very good, either the OE fluid or like an AMSOIL if they make it for it. AMSOIL makes a killer CVT fluid.
And that's pretty good. Okay.
So
that's your best.
I mean, you're looking at, you know, my shop, maybe $200 to the drain and fill the CVT, and it's mainly.
And how much is a new CVT?
Oh,
$6,000, $7,000.
Well, Nissan was getting really good at them. It seems like you could only buy the transmissions from Nissan when I was doing it. Couldn't find them used. Well, brave people would sell them used. You'd be crazy to buy one used, in my opinion. No one remands them as far as I know. So I want to say that they're like $5,000 installed.
Oh, that's, I mean, you think about $200 to change the oil on it every 30,000, which isn't bad. I mean, you take a couple dollars out of your paycheck as long as it takes to get 30,000. Yeah. Set aside, you'll get to $200.
Yeah.
And at least it gives you a chance at making it work.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have seen someone that did that, and they, at the last time I saw it, was 130,000 and still going strong.
Still going. That's pretty amazing.
So, and I would say maximum 60,000. 60,000, you're still getting, if you're not going to keep it to 200,000 or something, 60,000, 120, you know, 180. You may be okay, but I know some of them, I can't remember which one, but some of them recommend 60,000. They actually recommend it. Again, if they recommend 60, I'd do 30. If they recommend lifetime fluid, which means, well, you know, when it fails, it fails. I would recommend, you know, minimal every 60. And again, it's how you drive it too. If you're driving in town, if you're Ubering for crying out loud with a CVT, every 30,000.
Mm-hmm. And $200 to save yourself potentially $5,000, at least push off how long it's going to be before you have to spend that.
Yeah, and I also have to, I have to make this note too, because I ran into this recently and it felt really bad for the girl. But she had bought a, I won't say where she bought it from, but she had bought a Altima with 80, she had it for a year. So it had like 70 some thousand, 78,000 miles on
it. When she bought it?
Yeah.
Do you remember what year the Altima was?
It was a 2019.
So fairly new. Okay.
Fairly new. I mean, she was out of college, starting her nursing career, needed a reliable vehicle. She bought the aftermarket warranty, which I believe cost her $4,200. And again, I don't think it's the guy's fault that sold it, because this is something fairly new that I just ran into. But the aftermarket warranty people are on to the CVTs. Oh, it was probably draining them, or, you know, hurting them badly.
Well, if they cost $5,000 to redo and they're all having, well, not all, but majority are having problems, yeah, that would be a common issue.
Yeah. Wow. So she comes in, there's a certain code in Nissan that basically says replace your engine or your transmission, sorry. So she gets this drivetrain platinum coverage, whatever it was that she got, and I'm thinking nothing of it. I'm like, yeah, we got the code. It's not, in fact, I don't even think it was going in fourth gears. I can't remember. It was slipping or something was really bad. I'm pretty sure it got towed in. But anyways, I called the warranty company. I'm like, oh, this is gonna be, she's gonna be great, because she only had $100 deductible, and you know, she's a young out of college going to nursing, being a nurse, needed her car. We gave her a loaner. She had full coverage, of course, on it. We got a loaner and everything. And I called in. I got everything together from the dealership, got everything we needed, and called it in. And they went through the whole thing just to tell me we don't cover CVTs in this program.
Oh, boy.
First time I ever heard of it. And in fact, I don't even think the people that sold her the car, the guys that sell this are the finance people, and I don't know if they even know what a CVT is. A lot of them aren't car guys, technically. Mm-hmm. They're finance people. They're you know, all about the numbers and stuff. Yeah, she broke down in tears over the phone. And so what I told her, again, being in the industry as long as I have, I said, you need to go back to where you bought that. You have had no claims on this. It's been a year and a half since you had the car. And I said, technically, most of them, you can get your money back. Now, what you should do is go to this company and tell them you want them to buy the transmission at their cost, put the transmission in at their cost, whatever their hourly rate that they're losing, you know, where they break even. They break even on everything. They're not asking them to take a loss. But I bet you that $4,200 will cover that install of that new transmission. And guess what? You're not going to have problems for a long time, because the engines are fantastic. Just keep your oil changes up and all this stuff. And she got a little hope, and she went there, and they did exactly what, and then I said, by the way, tell them to watch what they're doing, because I think that may have been the first time they ran into it. I don't know. It's not, it was, I did these things all day, every day. These aftermarket, I'd never heard of that before. In fact, I've had a few of them covered.
It's incredible that the company did that for you. Yeah. There's a lot of companies that'd be really rude about that, but the fact they did that.
Well, you know, she went there and she knew her. She's not, you know, she's telling him, look, I don't want to make this a bad thing. I don't want to make this horrible. Do this for me. Now, yeah, she doesn't have that peace of mind warranty, but I can guarantee you, 60,000 miles, she didn't have any problems on that vehicle.
No, Nissan engines are so good.
She had the little four-cylinder. I want to say it was a
2.5, maybe
2.0, maybe. I don't remember what it was, but it was a good little engine. And again, keep your maintenance up on everything. She may have had a brakes or something, you know, go out tires and stuff. But But yeah, and so she called me back and told me what they did and thanked me. And yeah, so she went from crying to back to being happy again.
That's awesome.
And I think they got the car in and out in 2 days. So wow. It's not a hard transmission.
It's pretty incredible, though. It's a great story. Yeah. That's a really good story.
Yeah. So watch, starting, you know, this was probably a year and a half ago. Watch those aftermarket. I mean, if they're doing all CVTs, you're talking Subarus, you're talking a lot of your hybrids are CVTs. So be careful.
Yeah, that's a great customer advice. Great wisdom. Yeah. The last question I have on Nissan. Nissan is thinking about joining forces and selling some of their company off to somebody else and then partnering with them and forming this car manufacturing relationship. I don't know what that would look like, but in your mind, your CEO of Nissan, who are you partnering with that's going to be the best addition? You can share parts, share knowledge, and you can bring Nissan back just about from the dead at this point.
I don't think they need to do that, but if they did, they'd have to go with someone that has either a stronger CVT like Toyota and Honda, or someone that's doing well with their transmissions, which is like Mazda or something. That's just a knocked on the CVTs and still competes.
Sure.
They can at least learn from them, maybe they even take their transmissions, who knows, but maybe again they have to make them a little bit better because they're going to dig their way out of somewhere, and then the price points have to be right. But yet still, I mean, they've always had really good interiors and solid door shuts and good looking cars, in my opinion, you know, even down to the Nissan Sentra. It's a good looking little car.
So they are very sporty looking. Yeah. I want to end with a little more wisdom for the people that are listening and the people that are watching.
My wisdom.
Oh, there's a lot of wisdom, but I got one more question for you on wisdom. So you have talked about manufacturer recommendations. You said that right away about the CVT. Talk to me about those and tell me what you believe about manufacturer recommendations and how somebody listening or somebody watching can help their vehicle last just a little bit longer.
Hey, number one most important thing with any vehicle is manufacturer recommendations. And I would even go beyond that. I don't even know if I recommend Ford, I believe, or no, it could be Ford. Ford and Toyota, someone's 120,000 up front. They're all competing. They're all saying, okay,
Who can save you the most amount of money?
Well, they've got these reports now about how much it costs to own that vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And maintenance is including in that. And so everyone's competing with the maintenance to how far can we get these fluids to go. I mean, if you're talking in the Wisconsin area, we have a lot of all-wheel drives. These differentials have 1 quart of fluid in them. 1 quart. I don't care what kind of fluid it is. I don't care if it's Superman's blood. It's going to sooner or later get dirty and not work as well as it should.
Mm-hmm.
Especially from the factory where you know that the gears have to kind of break in and you're going to have that little bit of metallic in there. I mean, they're okay with that, you know, as long as you're not seeing chunks. If it were my vehicle, by 60 to 80, I would have all the fluids changed.
If they recommend 120.
If they recommend 100, 120, 90, whatever, 60 to 80, just change them all. And then do it every 60 to 80, every time. Don't slack on the maintenance, especially spark plugs. I can't tell you how many people, this just gets me. And thank God we have a way around it if you're a nice place. If someone comes in with their check engine light on, it seems to run a little rough, but it's not bad. 120, 130, 140,000, sometimes 100. I'll tell them right off the bat, have you done spark plugs? No, not that I know of. I'll look in history, can't find anything with spark plugs. They've owned it since 30,000. You know, never been done. So I'm like, okay, we're going to do a code read. Free of charge, just like O'Reilly's or anyone else that will do them. It's not a diagnostic, it's just a code read. And we're going to see misfires. And I'm going to tell you, especially if it's a four cylinder, because they're so easy to do, most of them. I'm going to say, if you get those misfire codes, would you like me to put in some plugs, clear the codes, and see if they come back before we charge you $175 to look at your misfire codes? Again, it could be something else. Could be fuel injectors, could be anything. However, there's a good chance it's just your spark plugs.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go about it that way as a service advisor and your company is able to do that and treat people that way, it's not so bad. But there are many times where someone's paying $150, $160, $170 to tell them they need spark plugs. And the spark plugs are $200 installed.
Yeah.
Horrible. Horrible to see. And again, it's not always the person's fault because they bought it at 80. They bought it at 90. They assumed it was done or they didn't know anything about maintenance. I can't tell you how many places I've seen. I don't know how good your quick lubes are at telling people about maintenance. I know some of them are pretty good. But if your guy that you go to is not mentioning maintenance other than oil changes and air cleaners and cabin filters, something's wrong. Most of your software, you have an interval button you can push and it will tell you recommendations. And most of them are spot on to the recommendations from the dealer
mm-hmm.
or from the company that you bought the vehicle.
Oh, there's also that scandal on the quick lube places too. Remember that years ago where the guy repaired his vehicle, got it all up to date and then brought it to the quick lube. And the guy said it needed a whole bunch of things that were already just done. Do you remember that?
Well, and again, I think
so. If they don't trust them,
yeah,
why not come to South Street?
Well, you've got to remember that if you have no indication of stuff, again, I'll have many people. I will never say if it's not on Carfax that you didn't have it done. I will never say that. I'll say, look, you've owned this vehicle for 50,000 miles. Do you remember having to pay out, you know, like a V6 would be $600-$700 for a tune up,
mm-hmm.
unless it's a Honda that really needs it. So if you have to pull the upper intake, you know, do you remember doing this? I don't know. Go look at your records. Let me know. Call me. Here's an estimate. Call me back. Let me know if you want to do this, if you have that done. Timing belt water pump. Very, very, very important, especially on interference engines like the Hondas. If it snaps, your engine's gone.
Mm.
So, you know, yes, it's $1,100 to $1,300, but again, it's an engine. So, you know, an $8,000 engine. So. And they can last for quite a while as long as you're doing that, you know, keeping those maintenance up. Differentials, there's some that say lifetime fluids. If you can drain it and fill it, and they have an opening that you can get to without having to remove the subframe, like some of these vehicles, I would say do it. It's not expensive.
Yeah, it's worth it just to make sure that your vehicle lasts that little bit longer and your parts run a little bit longer and you're not stranded on the side of the road if you're
different. And just to be reliable. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
absolutely. My last question for you to finish out.
That was the last question.
No, I got one more. Last question, I promise. The final question on your wisdom, and this is nothing more than your opinion, but how do you think we can improve our car community in not only Wisconsin, but around the world?
I think we have just to have, we have to have some more consistent car shows. I don't know if I'm really into the huge car shows. It's very hard to cover, you know, 2 acres of cars or whatever when they're huge. It's kind of fun to go to maybe once a year, but the little cars and coffees, the little things like that. They've got to try to get quality cars. They got to try to get quality people. It really boils down to, I don't know how you do that. There are places that have done it in the past. We just need to get those back. We need to get those, you know, those little weekly Sundays or whatever it may be. And then I do like the fundraisers and special event ones too. They tend to bring out some good people if you have contacts.
Mm-hmm.
But get those cars out there that people never see. You know, I don't care what they are, just get them out there. And, you know, if you see another 5.0 Mustang, standard Mustang in a car show, you know, you're not going to miss if you don't see one of those. You honestly don't see a lot of Camaros anymore. You used to see a lot of them.
Plus, they don't make them anymore.
The Challengers, the Chargers, you know, you'll have car shows, you'll see, you know, 15 of those, and there's only 200 cars in the car show, whatever. So I just think it needs to be, and maybe even little like, this is a 60s theme or something like that, where you're getting cars from an era that if you're interested, you're going. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because of you, I'm more into the supercars now. So to see supercars in a show, sometimes what are they doing in Wisconsin type of thing, mm-hmm. It's a fantastic thing. That's me personally. But and I do like to see just nifty things that people do with their cars. Mm-hmm. You know, even your Fox bodies nowadays, they're just getting crazy with some of the stuff they're doing.
There's some so really good
I have no problem with you know, seeing a supercharger on a vehicle that you would never expect a supercharger to be on, or twin turbos or something like, what the heck? You know, as long as it's done right and it's not like a hole through the hood and, you know, beat up car and, you know, something crazy.
And I'd love to have what you said about the people and the people that aren't afraid to come up to you and say, is that your vehicle? Can you tell me about it? Because the people that put their time and their money and their design, their heart into their vehicle to make it what it is, even if it's simple, they put on an air intake, a tune, a little spoiler, it looks reasonable. Somebody comes over and says, that is a cool little vehicle. Can you tell me what you did to it? It makes their day. And sometimes at this car shows, I see people, they're in like their little cliques.
Yeah.
It's like the Subaru guys are kind of here and they're talking about their Subarus, and the Mustang guys are there, and the bike guys are there, and then they don't really mix.
Right.
And they don't ask questions. And I don't know if people just don't know how to talk anymore, or they just don't care to ask questions.
That's part of it, and depending on, but you know, different generations are mixing in car shows a lot too. But one of the things that you don't see people do is take a chair and sit by your car,
mm-hmm.
and answer those questions. And I remember my buddy that brought his Corolla GR to the first car show he's ever brought it to. He put a chair there. Well, first of all, I didn't want to leave his car, but he got a million people asking him questions about it and stuff. It's like, that is so cool.
Yeah. You know? He loved answering and every single one of them.
It. Absolutely.
Every single one of them. Yeah.
And you see it at some car shows. You'll see some of these crazy nice cars, and an 11-year-old kid comes up and they're like, hey, you want to sit in it? You know, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You get that kind of stuff happening. You're getting the next generation, you know, ready for being enthusiasts. So.
And I can tell you from a person that would enjoy that, if I had a vehicle like that, that would make my day as much as it made theirs to see someone so happy and passionate about the vehicle that I own.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool idea. I think that would definitely build our car community.
Yeah, and then having nice weather helps.
It does help.
It's tough. It's tough in Wisconsin. Either we have, you know, 100-degree CDNX, or we have rain or cold.
And no car shows half the year, and winter is no fun either. But either way, it does build up our car community. It would make it better.
For sure.
But thank you for sitting down and talking. Thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for showing us your vehicles, giving us some insight. Check out Steve, South Street Motors in Sun Prairie. If you need some work done, look him up, give him a call, come in and say hi, and see what he can do for you. Thanks for sitting down and talking.
No problem.
And for those who are listening online, I want to thank you for taking time and listening. And for those who are watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe, leave a comment, drop a comment on anything that you said. You dropped a whole bunch of things, places that people could comment with questions, opinions, things like that. Tell us what you think.
They can also say, hey, I'd like to be on that podcast.
Yeah, I need some guests. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I'll always sit down and talk to somebody, whether you're a car enthusiast or you work at a dealership or whatever your situation might be. I'd love to sit down and talk to people. Absolutely. Well, until next time, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching, and we'll see you again soon.